Good morning, Hoboken Grace. This morning I have to be in Baltimore for a wedding, so I'm not able to be there with you. And I'm incredibly excited, not because I'm not there, but because today two of the individuals on our speaking team are going to be walking you through the conversation for the very first time. And I can't wait to see what happens as a result. As you know, as we're continuing to look at how we can impact more people, how we can continue to love those along the waterfront, one of the things that's absolutely crucial is that we're constantly finding people to build into, to help them do what we do. And that's not just you. It's not just those of you who are involved in ministries. That has to do with me as well. And so today, two of the people that I've been building into and that we've been working with over the last couple of months are going to be walking you through the next step in our dating and service conversation. And so this morning, would you guys just give an incredible welcome to Justin.
Thank you. That was very nice. Thank you. As Chris said, my name is Justin and I'm on the speaking team here at Hoboken Grace. And we are in the middle of this series on dating and service. And like many of you, I've been sort of making fun and joking about the Hoboken Grace dating service. But I want you to know it's alive and well. Our friends Brad and Susie got engaged last week, so congratulations to them. This topic of dating and service is one that's very important to me. It's the idea that when we're in relationships, that we're trying to figure out how can we give to the person that we're in the relationship with, rather than trying to understand how can I get something out of this relationship. I remember when I was first married to my wife, Nancy, I used to go to the grocery store with her on Saturday mornings. Now, I don't like the grocery store. I mean, it's crowded and the aisles are too narrow. You can't do a decent U-turn if you decide you don't want to go down that aisle. The carts, they have lousy suspension. What's up with that? Right? And I don't know what beautiful mind designs grocery stores, but I can never find anything. I mean, I know where the milk is. It's in the back. But otherwise, I have to go through the whole store to find anything. So even though I don't like grocery stores, and I bet you don't either, I was there dutifully on Saturday mornings with my wife, pushing the cart, trying not to run into her when she stopped suddenly because she wanted to get something off the shelves. And then I would also be like, okay, how fast do I have to go so that my cart is right in front of the samples just as they're coming out of the toaster oven? But the funny thing about going to the grocery store with Nancy, and I know some of you are on the edge of your seat like, he's going to tell me how to go to the grocery store and not feel frustrated. But no, the funny thing about my trips to the grocery store with Nancy is that very quickly it turned into what I could get instead of what I could give. I wasn't there anymore about how I could support her while we have to do this thing, grocery shopping. But instead, I was looking for the accolade. I was looking for the point. I was looking for her to say, oh, I made the right decision when I chose to marry this guy. Look, he's supporting me at the grocery store. And I think that it's really easy to fall away from this idea of what can I give in the relationship and fall back into this idea of what can I get. And that's why this topic about dating and service is so important to me. And I think it's one really worth our attention. So last week we looked at the idea of spiritual chemistry. The idea of when I'm in a relationship, how do I know how far to pursue the relationship? What criteria should I be using to decide to stay in the relationship and to pursue more intimacy? And of course, we were talking about what God says, that God encourages us to use spiritual chemistry as one of the criteria that we use when we decide who's in our relationship. Well, this week, we're going to be turning our attention to what it's like inside the relationship. What's it like to be in the relationship with somebody and to give to them? What's it going to look like? How's it going to work? So I'm going to give you the first clue on this topic. Are you ready? We're not all the same. I know what you're thinking, like, okay, yeah, that's sheer brilliance, Justin. I've heard that never before. But really, it's funny how quickly we fall into the trap of thinking that others are like ourselves. Now, I want you to think about something. What's really easy for you to do? What's something that's super easy for you to do? And then the people that you know, they struggle with that. For me, it's heights. I don't mind heights at all. I'll climb a ladder, climb scaffolding. I'll jump out of airplanes. I don't mind heights at all. But there are a lot of you who are thinking, I don't think I really like heights. It's really easy for me to get up on a ladder, really easy for me to go up on height. And I bet there's something for you too that's really easy for you to do. But then when you think about others, you're like a little confused, like, why are they struggling with this? I'll give you another example. You're driving down the highway and you're going the speed that you're going. And every time you have to pass somebody who's going painfully slow, you think to yourself, why can't they learn how to drive? They're going so slow. And then when somebody goes past you and they're absolutely whipping down the highway, you think to yourself, why are they going so fast? That person is crazy. We get into this perspective and we start thinking to ourselves, hey, the way I look at the world is the way that it really is. But it's not. We're not all the same. We're not all the same skill sets. We don't have the same passion. We don't have the same history. We don't have the same criterias. We're all very different. I remember one story about what this happened between Nancy and I. Now, my wife Nancy and I, we were friends for 11 years before we started to date. And so there was one particular weekend where she was in St. Louis visiting some friends, and we had arranged that her flight would go through Charlotte, which is where I was living, and we would have lunch together. So we planned that. She arrived at the gate. I picked her up at the gate. We went to the restaurant. We're sitting around having lunch together. And I'm talking to her about how I feel about dating her and what I'm excited about and what I'm nervous about. And I'm asking her, how are you feeling about dating? And she looks at me and she says in this incredible stage whisper, we are not dating! And I must have just had this incredibly stunned look on my face. And I think the other patrons in the restaurant and on the concourse and on the other airplanes all sort of stopped for a second too. And sort of like, what's going to happen next? There was this pause as everybody was sort of looking over at our table trying to figure out, is he going to cry? Is she going to get up? What's going to happen next? And it felt like a minute, but really it probably was just like, you know, 1 or 2 seconds while I was stunned. I had made a critical mistake. I had assumed that the criteria that I was using to decide whether or not we were dating or not was the same criteria that Nancy uses. And I don't know what your criteria is. There's a bunch of them, right? It could be the amount of time you spend together. It might be the amount of time you spend planning about the future. Maybe it's the amount of fun you have together or working on a project together or talking about your past together or spending nights on the phone to all hours. I don't know what your criteria is. There's a lot of different criteria. But I had made this mistake. I had made the mistake of believing that my criteria was her criteria. And when we make that mistake, when we start living our lives like the way that people think is the way I think is the way that everybody thinks in the situation, it can really be hurtful, can really be awkward. I have this friend, her name is Jane. She can go to the grocery stores again. She can go to the grocery store, to the frozen food section, and she can run into a perfect stranger, somebody she's never met before. And they'll talk about, oh, well, you know, this is her life story, and she's crying, and they cry together at the sad parts, and then they'll laugh together at the happy parts. And then as they're drying the tears off of each other's face and hugging goodbye, my friend Jane will say, and that's why I eat Tombstone Pizza. For her, there's no relationship at all. There's no connection at all to this idea of emotional family lifestyle sharing and commitment. She'll never see that person again, and it doesn't matter to her. There's this picture, I made a couple pictures. If you show the first graph, for many of us, we have this area, we have this thing, this indicator that tells us when we're in a deeper relationship. It starts growing in us. The more we spend time together, the more intimacy we have, we get into these deeper relationships, we feel more commitment. But for her, for Jane, it's the other side. If you show the other picture, there's no relationship whatsoever. She can be really far on the scale of a very emotionally meant, deep conversation and has absolutely no bearing on her level of commitment. And it can be like that for us. What's the criteria for you? I wonder. I don't know. But for all of us, we have that different criteria and we have to recognize there are differences between us. And I think it's important for us to really learn this. That there are not only are there differences between us, but we really need to pay attention to them. Because the level of destruction, if we stop paying attention to this, we can really destroy respect and trust and love and communication in our relationships. I'll give you an example of this. I was once driving down the highway on my motorcycle. It was one of the worst days to be on the motorcycle. It was about 40 degrees. It was terribly raining. I was so cold. And so I was driving down the highway at as fast as I felt like I could go, and because I really wanted to get out of the rain. And as I'm driving down the highway, in the right-hand lane, there's a car that's ahead of me. And as a motorcyclist, you're always paying attention. What's going on around me? What are the other vehicles doing? You want to be aware of what they're doing. And as I'm driving down the highway, I've got my retina burners on full beam to sort of let people know, I'm coming, get out of my way, here I come. And this driver turns on their hazards. And I think to myself, that's a really bad sign. This guy is going to be a hazard. And sure enough, as I got closer to that driver, he actually shifted lanes from the right lane to be in the left lane and started to drive slower. And my impression is that he was thinking I was driving too fast for conditions. And as I got closer, he actually did something even worse. He tapped on his brakes. Now, as a motorcyclist in a rainy environment, the last thing I want to do is tap on the brakes. You tap on the brakes, and before you can say ninja, you are scrubbing pavement. This guy had no idea that he was putting my life at risk, because his perspective, he felt, was the right one. And he wasn't willing to understand that maybe somebody else's perspective about what's too fast on a rainy day might be right. So it's really important for us to recognize the differences between us and to not let them lead us to places where we can destroy things in each other's lives. But it doesn't have to be all about destruction either. God has incredible things to say about the uniqueness, the fact that we are different, the fact that we are not the same, that we don't have the same history, we don't have the same skills, we don't have the same mission, we don't have the same passions. And there's this passage in Genesis where we start hearing about this idea of how God is creating us uniquely. In Genesis 5, it says, He created them, male and female, and He blessed them and called them human. What that passage says to me is that He designed us with this difference. He designed us that He knew we were going to be male and female, and He designed it into being what it means to be human. It's not some social construct created after the fact. No, this is part of His design, part of what He expected when He created us to be human. And some of you may know that in that passage, He says it's a good thing. There's another passage in Jeremiah 1:5, where it says this, I knew you before I formed you in your mother's womb. Before you were born, I set you apart and appointed you to be my prophet to the nations. Now, Jeremiah was one of the most important prophets to the ancient Israelites. And he spoke to not only to Israel, but to the many of the nations that were in the area at the time. And this is what God has to say to Jeremiah. He says, before I formed you in your mother's womb, before you were born, I set you apart and appointed you as my prophet to the nations. He's saying, I know who you're going to be. I've got some skills for you. I've got some tasks for you. I've got some passion for you. I know what I want for you to be in your world. I know who you. I want you to have an impact on. Before he was even born. I think this is saying to us that God says the uniqueness, the things that are different about us, He likes that. He encourages that. He wants that for us because He has a different plan for us, a different design for each one of us. There's a song in Psalm 139. Now, Psalm 139, I don't know if you've ever read it. It's a song. It's written by this guy named King David, the greatest king of all of Israel. And David is writing in the song. In the first part of the song, David talks about how God knows David intimately and that David can't even say anything or think anything that God doesn't know that's what he's going to say or think. And then later on in the song, he says, oh, but I can't go anywhere, God, without you being there. I can't go anywhere without you being there. I can go in the darkness. I can go in the light. Wherever I go, God, you are there. And he's celebrating all of these things that God knows David that well, that God is with David everywhere David goes. And then he says this, for you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. In this passage, David is saying, I know I'm unique. I know I'm different. I know that you created me before I was even born. And it's wonderful. It's awesome. And I remember when I first started to follow Christ, when I first decided that I was going to be part of God's family, I didn't really like who I was. I didn't like what I had come from. I didn't like where I was had to offer. I was really disappointed in who I was. And somebody showed this passage to me to say, guess what? God loves you. God thinks that you're incredible. God created you the way that you are, and He is so excited about it. He's happy about it. He likes you. I remember learning that and thinking to myself, wow, that's incredible. And here David is celebrating, hey, I am unique. I am different. And it is a good thing. So not only are we having differences in who we are, but God likes those differences. God likes our uniqueness. There's a passage in Ephesians chapter 2. It says, for we are God's workmanship, created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which God prepared in advance for us to do. In that passage, we hear that yes, God has a skill for you. God has a plan for you. God has a goal for you. And it's not just these passages. You can hardly open up the Bible without hearing, hey, guess what? You're different. You're unique. And God designed you that way and likes it. So there's a lot of great passages about that. But it's more than just that God likes our differences and He likes our uniqueness. I want to tell you about this story that occurred in John chapter 4. In John chapter 4, we encounter Jesus Christ, and He is walking with His disciples from Jerusalem to Galilee. Now, that's about 60 miles or so, 60 to 80 miles or so. And so they couldn't obviously get on the motorcycles and drive. They're walking this route. And as they're walking from Jerusalem to Galilee, they go through an area called Samaria. Now, in Samaria, the Jewish people and the Samaritan people, there was a lot of conflict between them at the time. And not just minor conflict, but real conflict. Real conflict between them. But while Jesus is sitting there at the well, while His disciples are off to the community getting something to eat, Jesus starts a conversation with a woman, a Samaritan woman. Now, the differences between Jesus and this woman are vast, right? I mean, He's a Jewish person, she's a Samaritan, He's a man, she's a woman. He's a rabbi, a teacher of God's word. She has five husbands or has had five husbands. And despite the differences between them, despite the uniqueness between them, Jesus uses those uniquenesses to reach across the aisle to her, to find a way to give her. He says to her, basically, look, all these things that you've been searching for to find fulfillment, you'll find fulfillment in Me. You'll find fulfillment in a relationship with God. Despite the differences between us, despite that you're a woman and I'm a man, I'm Jewish and you're Samaritan, He uses all those differences to communicate to her love, to figure out what He can give her rather than what He can get from her. And if this is your first time in a church and this idea that God is pursuing you to be in a relationship with you for what He can give, that may be a new idea. But this passage is just another example of where God is showing us, hey, I'm in this relationship with you for what I can give you. And despite the fact of the differences, Jesus steps across those differences and finds a way to communicate to her, hey, I want to give you something. I want to give you real fulfillment. I want to give you living water. And not only does He impact that woman, but He ends up staying in the community for 2 days and sharing with many people, and many of the Samaritans who lived in that community came to understand that Jesus is God and that God cared about them. Despite the differences, He uses them to figure out a way that He can give to them. And actually, you can go through the whole New Testament and you'll find Jesus. He's talking to a huge variety of people. If He talks to the tax collectors, He talks to them about the government. If He's talking to fishermen, He's talking to them about fish. If He's talking to shepherds, He's talking to them about sheep. He uses the differences between Him and the people He's talking to help them understand love, to give them something. To give them something. And so as we're looking at how we're in these relationships, we want to follow God's pattern on this. We want to follow His method to say, okay, here are the differences in us. How can I use these differences to communicate love to you? So I have three pieces of advice for you on this. The first thing is that you have to commit to being a learner. Commit to being a learner. You're different now than you were ever before. Think about it. 10 years ago, what were you like then? What was passionate in your life then? What was important to you then? For some of you, 10 years ago, you were like 12 to 16 years old. That's a very different person than the one who's sitting in the chair here today, right? And thinking about how different you are from that person and how you look back at that person 10 years ago, you're not even sure you recognize them. To still think when we're in our relationships, we need to commit to being a learner. I recently learned something about my wife. I've already told you that we were friends for 11 years. We've been married for almost 14 years. And just recently, I learned something about Nancy that I didn't know. And if you've met my wife, Nancy, you know she's kind of an understated person. She's kind of a quiet person. But I found out that Nancy is a complete blast to watch a football game with. I mean, we're sitting there, we're watching the football game, and she's yelling at the TV, and Charles Woodson is catching the football. He's caught an interception. He's running to the end zone to score a touchdown, and she's yelling at the TV, "Go, go, go, go! Yeah!" She gives me a high five. We totally have a blast watching the Packers win. And then she starts, we yell cheers, "Go, Pack, go! Go, Pack, go! Come on with me! Go, Pack, go! Go, Pack, go!" Well, I guess not everybody here's a Packer fan. But you get the idea. I had no idea. For over 20 years, I knew Nancy one way, shape, or another, and I had no idea watching a Packer game with her would be a blast. So you have to commit to being a learner. The second thing I would recommend is that assign roles and responsibilities in the relationship based upon your strengths. There are a lot of ways that society tells us this is how the roles should be. You're a woman, you should cook. You're a man, you should go to work. Whatever that is, don't let society decide for you what your role should be and how it should be. Instead, use your strengths. Once you've learned about your strengths and your weaknesses, use those to decide what roles you have. I learned how to pay bills from my mom. Now, the technique that she did was this. She would get the bills and she'd put them in the basket. And then once a month, she would look through the bills, figure out which bills she absolutely positively had to pay, she'd pay those. And the bills that aren't paid, she'd put back in the basket and wait until next month and look through the bills again. So that's the technique I used. I'd get my bills, I'd put them in a pile, and then sometimes I wasn't so good at looking every month. I might wait 2, 3, 4 months before I would look at the bills. And what would the result be? I would get late payments, I would have interest payments, I'd get those nasty letters from the people saying, if you don't pay, we're going to cut off your service. So I came up with this great strategy. When I open the bill and I'm going to pay the bill, I'll pay 3 times the amount that's listed on the bill. And that way, by the time I look at the bill again, maybe I'll have a little credit instead of And I know some of you are thinking, that's really crazy, but others of you are thinking, that's pure genius. But in our house, that's not the way that bills get paid. Nancy has this technique. It's crazy to me. She looks at the bills, and she decides, she sees when they're due, and she pays them before they're due. It's a great technique. We never have late payments or interest payments or nasty letters from people. She's got this great technique. And that's her strength. She can do that really well. She can put the bills in the right place and pay them on time. I actually struggled a little bit when I was trying to think, okay, well, what's my story? What do I do really well? I mean, when Nancy and I first got married, she said, okay, 3 nights a week I'll cook dinner, 2 nights a week you cook dinner, and then 2 nights we'll eat leftovers or go out or something. I said, okay, I can try that. So come back from the honeymoon, it's my turn to make dinner. And so I made the best thing that I knew how to make, right? I wanted to impress my wife, so I had some chicken and some rice and some vegetables and steamed them together in a casserole. Nancy says, I don't need to help in the kitchen anymore. And I know some of you are thinking, that's genius. But really, the fact of the matter is that I actually do. I had to practice. I had to learn some skills, some basic functions. You know, I can now make pancakes and burn stuff on the grill like many of most guys. But so it's not an excuse, right? I can't say, okay, well, my role in the relationship, I am really good at sitting on the couch and watching TV for 12 hours on Saturday. And that's going to be my role. No, that's not what this is. This is about what can we find to give in the relationship. So yeah, you might have some weaknesses that you've got to figure out how to work through and do a better job of. But the idea is, again, figure out what your strengths are and work to the strengths. Assign roles based upon your strengths. And then the third thing I'm going to suggest for you is this, which is there's going to be times when there's going to be conflict. And in the face of conflict, consult your differences. And by this, what I'm saying is there's going to be times when you're going to disagree. There's going to be times when what's important to you is not important to them. And you need to figure out how you're going to resolve that. And what I recommend for you is to listen. I don't know that there is a gift that we can give to our partners better than saying to your partner, you know what? I love you. And we're in this together. And I want to understand why this is important to you. I want to understand what it is that we can do. I want to understand your viewpoint. Tell me how you feel about it. Tell me what you think about it. And really listen. Turn off the TV. Turn off the iPhone. And look them in the eye and really listen. Because when you're in the midst of conflict, when you're in the midst of dealing with the differences, the uniqueness of each person, if you take that moment and you really listen, you're communicating, I love you. And you're communicating a real gift. You're more important. I'm going to take care of you. And I'm going to listen to you. So we've talked about who. Who we're talking about is the people that we're in relationship. And what? We're talking about how can we, in these relationships, strategize so that we can give into those relationships rather than trying to figure out how we can get them. And here's some three hows. We can commit to always being a learner, commit to understanding what's new about the person. We can assign roles and responsibilities based upon our strengths. And in the face of conflict, we can work to listen to each other, work to understand each other. But I want to talk a little bit about the why. Because one of the things that I have realized as I've been having this conversation about what it means to be in relationship and how to give in that relationship is this. And we've touched on it a little bit today. God has created them beautifully, uniquely, wonderfully, amazingly, and He loves them. God created Nancy, beautiful Nancy, the way that He created her, and He loves her so much. He loves her so much that He actually died on the cross so that she could be adopted into His family. And God has taken that precious jewel and entrusted it to me. He's taken this beautiful, wonderful, unique person and entrusted her to me to love, to take care of, to listen to support. This is the motivation. This is the why. Why, when we are in relationship, we're going to seek to give. We're going to seek to give by always remembering to learn, to assign roles based upon strengths, to listen in the face of conflict. Because this amazing person that God created has been entrusted to me. Will you pray with me? Father, it's amazing. It's amazing that this beautiful person that you've created, you've entrusted her to me to love, to take care for you, to communicate every day that she's wonderful and loved. And it's an awesome responsibility. It's an incredible responsibility that you've given. And we need you. We want to be part of your family. We need you to help us to love these people, to give to them, to see ways that we can share and love and help them. Thank you for this great opportunity to love. Amen.